Good evening. It is 5 p.m. on Thursday, February 19th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents, now in a new time slot. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be diving into some updates directly from City Council this week, the extension of winter festivities downtown, and the upcoming Coldest Night of the Year event in support of Lionhearts. Without further delay, let's start off with those City Council updates. At their Tuesday night meeting, Council had the opportunity to speak with representatives from Aalto, the agency charged with recommending a high-speed rail route from Quebec City to Toronto, and passed a motion making the addition of a Kingston stop the condition for Council support on the route's southern leg. Aalto representatives confirmed that the high-speed rail project currently has a mandate from the federal government to include 7 stops, and Kingston is not one of them, in spite of having the 4th busiest via rail station in the country. Kingstonians across sectors appeared before Council to share the importance of a stop in Kingston, including Queen's students.
This high-speed rail project will reshape existing networks, and if it proceeds as currently conceived, it will lead to fewer stops, higher prices, and reduced service in our area. For students already facing rising tuition, rent, and food costs, even small increases in transportation expenses can be life-altering.
The president of Kingston Health Sciences Center.
Our ability to deliver the most advanced care in the region depends on the people we can attract and retain. Physicians, nurses, researchers, allied health professionals, and learners, to name a few. A Kingston stop on the proposed Southern Aalto high-speed rail line is a vital opportunity to strengthen our healthcare workforce. Strong infrastructure supports strong healthcare, and strong healthcare supports a strong region.
And representatives with Kingston's business community.
Advocating for high-speed rail isn't just natural, it's necessary to secure Kingston's future.
Lisa Asbrook, a representative with the Corridor Train Alliance, a group calling for dedicated passenger rail lines to be built along the Highway 401 corridor, also appeared before Council, encapsulating many of the concerns shared by Kingstonians across the board about a route that bypasses Kingston, including impacts on businesses, environment, and rural communities north of Kingston.
The Corridor Train Alliance has been formed with a stated ambition of having every single township and city and organization in Eastern Ontario speak in one voice and ask for a dedicated track in the 401 corridor. Capital isn't coming here. Conferences aren't coming here. Money isn't coming here. And it's because they can't get here. We need to protect the inherent value of farmland and ecologically sensitive areas and wildlife corridors to our neighbors and not divide us against them.
When asked by councillors, Asbrook also dove into more specific concerns for rural communities. Should the route not be built along the Highway 401 corridor?
The people in the rural communities are concerned about what could be akin to like a wall dividing their communities. At grade, fully fenced, divides intergenerational farms. I grew up on an intergenerational farm. It's not tenable for farmers to drive around long distances. It divides country roads. They're concerned about emergency services, bus routes, divisions in small hamlets and communities. Many of us are environmentalists. We see the land trusts, the parks, the wildlife corridors, the biosphere around us. The rural townships have been told to build tourism around food security, local food production, ATV trails, recreation trails. And now those get sliced in half.
Mayor Brian Patterson put forward the motion for Council to formally request the Federal Minister of Transportation to enhance Aalto's mandate to include the addition of a Kingston stop. The motion also states Council will formally oppose the creation of the Southern Aalto route if the stop is not added.
I think that every one of us understand that one of the most important success factors for our community is strong transportation links that can get people to and from Kingston. The challenge is that we do not control those links. There are many important issues that we discuss around this table where we are the decision maker. Unfortunately, in this case, we can only advocate. We can lobby. We can make our case, whether that's with air service, rail service, or whatever form of transportation we're talking about. And we're going to continue to do that. But ultimately, if everyone is going to benefit from high-speed rail, the way to do that is to put a fourth Ontario stop right here in Kingston. Right now, there are four stops in Quebec, and there are three in Ontario. And by far, the largest distance between stops currently is between Peterborough and Ottawa. The case is absolutely, in my view, a slam dunk to add one more stop in Kingston. And I think that this motion tonight is definitely a step towards making that a reality.
Two amendments were made. One clarifying the route should not be changed to the detriment of nature or rural communities, and one changing wording to ensure that it was clear that council does not support the current proposed route. However, some councillors, like Councillor Connie Glenn, still feared unintended consequences of the motion, including opening the door to a railway which would be disruptive to Kingston's northern neighbours.
I don't think we've got this right. I don't think this gives enough assurance to our neighbours that we're not going to inadvertently support a southern route that would go through there. And I think that that's why Councillor McLaren brought up the point about the 416. So this is not encapsulating, I think, the true intent that we're trying to do here.
However, other councillors argued now is the time to speak up.
I think that the core of this motion is really just, do we advocate for a stop in Kingston or do we not advocate for a stop in Kingston? I'm fine with it going along the 401 corridor. I think that just makes sense. I think we've heard from our neighbors in South Frontenac how divisive this is. I think at the end of the day, what we need to do as a council and as, you know, a local municipality is just voice where we are on the broader theme of this to the federal government. This, we're not the decision-making body on this. We won't be when it comes time to fund the project. I'm comfortable supporting the motion as is. I think it's very straightforward that either we get a stop railway stop in Kingston or we oppose the overall southern leg of this, which to me just seems like a reasonable position to take. If it's not going to service our constituents, that's who we're here to advocate for, what benefit will it have?
The estimated $60 to $90 billion infrastructure project is still in early planning stages, with consultation ongoing and construction expected to begin in 2029, with the entire network to take 15 years to complete. After a failed attempt to defer, the final motion passed with a vote of 9-2, with councillors Connie Glenn and Jeff McLaren opposed.
Our advocacy is not going to be done on this tonight. This is just one more step and one more battle to try to get those transportation connections right. There are going to be more motions when we're going to talk about Via Rail and connections with Alto. There is still a lot of runway ahead of us, but I think that this is a good step. It's very clear, very simple, exactly, I think, what Alto needs to hear in their consultation. And I think it sets us up for those future conversations where we continue to make our voice heard.
Following widespread complaints from residents across Kingston, City Council unanimously approved a motion calling on Circular Materials Ontario and its recycling contractor in Kingston, Mterra Environmental, to take immediate action. The motion urges the companies to improve the reliability of curbside recycling collection and ensure clearer, more responsive communication with residents. In June 2021, the province of Ontario introduced the Blue Box Regulation, shifting the financial and operational responsibility for recycling away from municipalities and onto the producers of packaging and paper products. As part of that transition, responsibility for Kingston's recycling program officially changed hands on July 1st, 2025. Administration of the program moved to Circular Materials Ontario, a not-for-profit organization, which in turn contracted Mterra Environmental to handle curbside recycling collection in the city. Since the changeover, many Kingston residents report missed pickups and delayed or insufficient responses from Mterra. Those frustrations have increasingly landed at City Hall, with councillors around the horseshoe saying they've heard repeatedly from constituents experiencing service problems and experienced some of their own.
I think we've all been hearing from the same kinds of stories. Blue boxes have been left out at the curb, pickups have been missed, people are not sure who to call. They call, they're not getting clear answers, and eventually they call us because to them, this feels like a city service. And honestly, you can't blame them. The residents didn't vote for this change. They didn't redesign the system. They're just trying to recycle like they always have. The tricky part is, we don't run the system anymore. We don't control the contracts. CARC has closed down and there's nowhere to take your recycling. We are still the ones people turn to when our neighborhood isn't working.
I've gotten also a lot of complaints or not necessarily complaints, but it was a lot of people noticing that the service level wasn't the same. And just a side note, I was actually relying on how unreliable that they were, that I would always put my recycling late.
In response, Councillor Brandon Tozzo brought forward a motion urging CMO and MTERA to take concrete steps to improve service delivery.
This motion does three practical things. It asks Circular Materials and MTERA to improve reliability for recycling collection here in Kingston, and please do a better job of communicating with residents. If this new model is going to work, it has to work on actual collection day, on actual households, on actual streets, including in winter. Second, it asks our staff to help clear up the confusion by sharing straightforward information with the public about this new system and how it works and who to contact when there's a problem. People shouldn't have to sort through websites like their recycling just to report a missed pickup. And third, it sends a message along to CMO's leadership and our local MPPs because this system flows from the provincial decisions. They need to hear formally from us of how it's playing out on the ground with communities like Kingston. This is not about picking a fight or trying to turn back the clock. The new system is here. This is about standing up for our residents and saying, if you're going to change our recycling system, just make sure it works. And if something goes wrong, the answer shouldn't be hard to find. People are doing their part every week. I don't think it's too much to ask that MTERA and Circular Materials do their part too.
CMO CEO Alan Langdon was at council to answer questions about the ongoing issues. When asked how CMO plans to address the complaints, Langdon committed to sending a direct mailer to Kingston residents outlining how to report service issues. He said the standard process is for residents to contact MTERA directly when recycling is missed and to escalate concerns to CMO if necessary. Councillors also questioned why MTERA was not present to answer directly for the service delays. Langdon said the company is currently managing a program launch elsewhere in the province, but committed to returning to council alongside MTERA representatives at a future date.
We may not have direct control, but we have a voice, and I think we should use it. It's worth noting it took a motion of council to get Circular Materials to talk to council and get their attention that there's a problem. And this was without MTERA present. That says something. We had a promise from Circular Materials that they would come back with MTERA. I'm going to hold them to that, or they're going to get another motion from me.
Council has approved a motion to review how outdoor rinks are operated across the city, citing growing challenges tied to weather, water access, and limited resources. The motion brought forward by Councillor Ryan Bohm notes that while the city operates a network of outdoor rinks, service levels and operational requirements vary widely, and increasingly unpredictable winter conditions have made consistent operation more difficult. The motion directs city staff to undertake a full service level review of the outdoor rink program, including public engagement. That review will examine rink locations, potential consolidation opportunities, different service models, and operational changes aimed at making better use of existing resources.
There's lots of information that we need to get on this. I know in the past there's been some frustrations when, the expectations set in the community and boards go up and there's zero skatable days. So this is more to look at what's the programming that we have, where can it get better, where should we really put our resources.
Councillors Gregory Ridge and Don Amos voiced their support for the review.
I've heard similar concerns from my constituents and potential frustrations around having this winter season and the rinks not being available in time. I'm also understanding that there are technical challenges around that happening. But yes, fully in support of this to see what good developments can come out of it.
I was a kid growing up in the city that had the pleasure of playing on Skeleton Park outdoor rink, really learning how to skate. And so I have very fond memories of that. And so for our city staff to do a system review and really work through this, I think that's a good thing. And it means that if we can deliver something that is solid for our kids and solid for young adults and adults to enjoy hockey or skating, I think we're heading in the right direction.
City staff have been directed to report back to council by the third quarter of 2026, with options to make things smoother on and off the ice. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, February 19th, daytime high of 0, real feel of -3. Friday, February 20th, more snow in the forecast, daytime high of -5, and a bone-chilling feel of -16. Saturday, February 21st, daytime high of -2, feeling like -6. Sunday, February 22nd, daytime high of -4, feeling like -10. And then kicking off next week, Friday, February 23rd, daytime high of -5. But with the wind chill, it's going to feel closer to -9. This is your City of Kingston traffic report. Just a reminder, overnight parking restrictions are in effect for the rest of February. Come March 1st, the overnight restrictions will loosen to where overnight parking is only banned when weather conditions require it, i.e. if there is snow or freezing rain in the forecast. Until March 1st, all overnight street parking is banned in the City of Kingston.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. Kingstonians who have not yet had a chance to explore the illuminated forest, say hi to KCFF mascot Conrad the Raccoon, lace up their skates, or toast some marshmallows yet this winter are in luck. The Downtown Kingston BIA has announced the extension of the Spirit of Winter Festival until the end of the month. While the second annual winter celebration set up in Springer Market Square was originally scheduled to end on February 16th, due to overwhelming popularity, the event will now run through February 28th. In an interview about the launch of the festival earlier this month, Downtown Kingston events manager Sandy Griffiths shared that the event's new addition this year, the Snow Dome Village, was especially popular, with spots selling out in record time.
But because we've had such a phenomenal response to the snow domes already, we are actually extending the whole festival through the end of February. So because some of the days for the snow domes have already sold out.
Visitors can reserve the heated dome set up by City Hall for a cozy hang and order treats and hot beverages from local downtown businesses. The success of the Snow Dome Village was a large contributing factor in the decision to extend the event. A portion of the proceeds from Snow Dome Village fund the BIA's Welcoming Streets program, which engages with individuals experiencing homelessness, addiction, and mental health difficulties, connecting them with essential resources and services. The revenue also helps sustain the BIA's free summer programming, including Kingston Buskers Rendezvous, Movies in the Square, and Salsa in the Square. Jan McDonald, the BIA's director of events, said in a recent release, quote, "We're absolutely delighted by the community's response to Spirit of Winter Enchanted. Extending the event not only gives more people a chance to experience the magic, but also amplifies our ability to support our outreach and events programming that strengthen our downtown community year-round," end quote. Once again, you can catch Spirit of Winter Enchanted until the end of the month in Springer Market Square. On Saturday, February 28th, Kingstonians will be braving the cold to help provide relief to those who need it most. Coldest Night of the Year is a nationwide fundraising walk, with 100% of proceeds going to local charities supporting those experiencing hurt, hunger, and homelessness. Since 2011, the Coldest Night of the Year has raised over $75 million across Canada in 190 communities. In Kingston, the fundraiser supports Lionhearts, which is aiming to raise $65,000 this year, up from last year's total of nearly $50,000 as need continues to rise. I spoke with Lionheart CEO Travis Blackmore about how this year compares to past walks, the growing need for support, and what Kingstonians can expect this year. I was wondering if you could give us some context walking into this year. What looks different this year in terms of need, urgency, and demand for Lionheart services?
Yeah, unfortunately, with today's climate and the way things are, the need has never been greater in the community. The amount of folks that are victim of food insecurity is only growing, unfortunately. So that makes us feel at least fortunate that Lionheart is able to help in this regard, and we're honored to be able to do so. But we need help from folks in the community. It's often said it takes a village, and it sure does. It takes all of us, including our partners that donate to us, and then those frontline agencies that we do distribution and food, culinary and meals for. Yeah, it all ties together to bring together a community to make a difference. And coldest night is one of those fundraising moments for us in the year that's very important. Gets us outside, gets us moving together as a community, as a group, to raise awareness, but also to raise funds to continue making that difference throughout the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there, need has never been greater, both in terms of immediate pressures and projects in the works. What kind of things will these funds raised this year be going towards?
For sure. Well, when we do our food rescue, it is quite an operation, and it's no small task. So a lot will go toward helping move those trucks and move those vehicles. Last year, in the first 6 months, Lionheart's gathered and distributed over $10.5 million worth of goods and got that, made sure that that food was put to use in the community, making nutritious meals and also being provided to agencies to make meals as well. There's a number of other projects that Lionheart's has, including our supportive housing, but also our mobile markets, for those that are elderly and living in food deserts, as well as student food boxes. There's a number of things that Lionheart's does in the community, and this will all go to reinforce that and help us in 2026.
Mm-hmm. And Lionheart's is already at 49% of its $65,000 goal, a bit of a higher goal than last year. How are you feeling so far with this early momentum?
Honestly, Kingston is one of those generous cities. There's a bunch of generous people living there. So the fact that we're about to hit that 50% mark is so encouraging. It's usually always right at the last couple of days that you get really close to that goal, because that's just the nature of fundraising. But other things like coming to the end of the month and awareness and all the things that we're grateful for, even folks like you helping us get the word out there to those and just reminding them that they can make a difference. There's still time to sign up a team or join a team or contribute to a team, or just even hitting that share button is a big, big help. And so honestly, I'm grateful to the Kingston community and how they rally behind us each and every year.
Mm-hmm. And going into this year, I was wondering if you could share just a few of the ways that folks can contribute and offer any last words of encouragement to get the community out on the 28th.
Yeah, of course. So if you are to go to CNOY, coldest night of the year, CNOY.org, and search Kingston, you'll see Lionheart's right there. You can click inside the website to make your donation. If you have a friend that's walking, you can contribute to their walk. But I would challenge you, if you own a business, sign up a team, represent your business, get out there, create awareness, rally folks behind you. If you're an individual, you can still start your own team. Get together some colleagues or people from your circle of life that you walk with. You can still make a difference. If you go to our Facebook or Instagram or our X job, you can click the share button. And again, it's all about creating that awareness. You never know who is in your circle that will feel moved to contribute in a meaningful way. And all of these things add up to making Coldest Night of the Year a success.
I feel like every year we hear about just the vibe on the day and how inspiring it is and hopeful. I was wondering if you could just speak to that and what folks can expect this year in alignment with past years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we kick off, we like to motivate folks and really get across our appreciation for them setting aside the time and wanting to make a difference in their community. The mayor will be there to give some words to the community. We'll all rally together and begin the walk halfway through. And our amazing sponsor, Starbucks, will provide hot and cold drinks again. They've always been a huge support for us in this community, so massive hats off to Starbucks. And then we'll again return back to our host venue, which is Kingston Gospel Temple, and there'll be hot food, refreshments, and also live music this year with Andrew Van Horn and the Celtic Kitchen Party. So we like to have a good time. I mean, it's heavy subject matter, making a difference, food insecurity, people struggling. But, you know, in the true Canadian spirit, we can have fun while we try to take care of those that might be struggling. You know, that's what the Canadian spirit is all about.
Once again, that was Lionheart CEO Travis Blackmore on Coldest Night of the Year 2026, taking place on Saturday, February 28th. This year's Kingston Walk will begin at the Kingston Gospel Temple at 2295 Princess Street and finish at the Indigo Starbucks at the Cataraqui Center. Walkers will travel up to 5 kilometers, beginning shortly after 5 p.m. Coldest Night of the Year is family-friendly and open to people of all ages and abilities, with route options designed to be accessible and welcoming. Once again, you can visit CNLY.org for more information. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present music from local singer-songwriter Lydia Shea's debut EP, Lucid Embers, a genre-defying release rooted in emotional honesty and creative freedom where clarity glows softly in the aftermath of the fire. You may remember her powerful voice busking downtown. You'll get a glimpse of her now in full stride on a stage of her own with Velvet and Venom, a single that serves as a soundtrack to reckless romance and royal delusion. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Lydia Shea's Lucid Embers on your favorite platforms and enjoy Velvet and Venom from that EP here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
I'm your queen, you're my king, it's a royal regal thing. Pinkies up, need a drink, leather-lined limousine. Top down, hair down, heard the crown is heavy, but you wear it well. Fits you how I wear your heart on my sleeve, there's no slowing down. I'm moving now like we're in a movie on the big screen, you and me. Cause we're young love, ain't nobody gonna fix me. Cause you're my drug, and I like the way you fit me. Baby, pick me up tonight, and sweep me off my feet.
Sweep me off my feet.
Cause baby, you and I got forever written on it. Forever we're iconic. It's you and I against the world, against the haters. We're not getting beat. My love, it's just you and me. Red hot silhouette, I won't say a word if you keep my head on your chest and my hand over your heart. Shiny bling, golden ring, Tiffany is everything. Baby, you're my everything. Cause we're young love, ain't nobody gonna save me. Cause you're my drug, yeah, you cure me like nobody. Baby, pick me up tonight and sweep me off my feet. No, that's not an easy feat. Oh, baby, got forever written on it. You and I are forever, we're iconic. It's just you and I against the world, against the haters. We're not getting beat. My love, it's just you and you and you.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to be here in Paris, Roland Garros for a Grand Slam action.
The match of the day, Martin Solveig against Bob Sinclair.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Plugged in My Ears podcast. I am your host, Adam Whale. I'm so excited to be here today with my little pookie bear, Jackson Lowe's, on the show.
First time ever.
And that speaking there is Mr. Aiden Peterson, our soccer and girlfriend hater expert. And here we are with Jackson, the Emerald City Seahawks specialist. How excited are you to be on the show, Jackson?
Mildly excited.
That's how we like to keep it here. This is a mild podcast with no hot takes.
No exaggeration
at all. Ever since Sam's been out of here. No, I'm just kidding. Sam and Kyle will be back next week. They're busy this week again, I guess. I don't know. Maybe they're actually in Italy getting some analysis for our show next week. They're not. But yes, we are going to be talking Olympics. We're going to be talking Gavin McKenna. And some team won the Super Bowl or something. I don't really know. That's what we got
allegedly,
the expert for,
allegedly.
Right?
Yeah. The most goated team of all time, I will say.
All right, let's hop in with this Gavin McKenna case. It's kind of dated now. Like we are getting this super late. Like, as everyone knows, we record on Tuesdays. This is going to come out on Thursday. But this like happened like last Friday. Like, everyone heard about this.
The first on the scene, that's for sure.
No, this is not breaking news. But Gavin McKenna was in a bit of a bar fight, it seems. And he ended up breaking someone's jaw. They were required to shut the guy's jaw, I think, or they had to like restructure it or something. So he was originally being charged with a plethora of things. But I think now he's just facing a misdemeanor. But he still could face up to 20 years in prison if found guilty. For those who don't know, Gavin McKenna is the projected number one overall pick in the NHL draft. He was consensus a little while ago, but some other players have been making their case. So he wasn't really consensus number one, but he's definitely a top three pick for sure. Mm-hmm. He was a stud at the World Juniors, and he's currently playing at Penn State University, and he's doing quite well. But this is, we haven't seen something like this in a really long time, especially in the NHL. We've seen this in other sports leagues where sometimes things come out pre-draft and they go downhill. They tank in the draft rankings. But this is the first time that I can really think of a really big one, other than I guess the closest would be like Logan Mailloux with the Montreal Canadiens a couple years ago. But this is pretty interesting to see, because Gavin McKenna seems like such a mild-mannered, calm guy on the ice. Makes you think what really triggered this. Any thoughts?
Well, I'd first like to say that, you know, it's a good sign every time a young NHL prospect makes the news. Mm-hmm. But in the case of the Gavin McKenna situation, from the rumor mill online, nothing confirmed, but although the internet never lies, so we can trust this information, mm-hmm. allegedly... a drunken person at the bar was hurling insults at his mother, whether she was there or not. And this went on for a while and resulted in McKenna eventually putting an end to it in his own way, in his own manner. So I'm not sure how much of this is true. We'll wait for more of the details to come out. But I think if this is the case, I think some of that action might be justifiable on McKenna's side.
Yeah, because we don't even know if he was intoxicated, because McKenna being underage in the U.S., like, he apparently had a wristband on that said he wasn't supposed to drink. This is like all like stuff I've just seen on like Reddit, and like, you cannot trust these sources.
Yeah.
But apparently, like, he took off the wristband and like was trying to get drinks and he got super drunk. But I kind of highly doubt that that was the case, especially with so the guy that got hit apparently dropped the civil case against McKenna. And the police determined that there was no intent by McKenna to cause serious bodily harm. And that was part of the reason why that got thrown out. So it does kind of look like a defending his mother's honor, if that's the case, or defending someone's honor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really seem like Gavin McKenna does not give me insane person vibes. So I think that this is not really going to affect too much. He's expected to not miss a single college hockey game go with these things going on.
Yeah.
So I really don't think it's as serious as it's made up to be. But definitely not the thing you probably want to be in the news for, coming up to probably one of the biggest moments of your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that it will have too much of an impact on where he goes in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Would it actually solidify his position of where he goes in the draft? Because I don't believe we haven't seen much of a physical side from McKenna yet.
Yeah.
So if teams that potentially are looking for a more physical skill player, could this actually improve his draft stock?
I have heard NHL teams are looking outside of the box on how they evaluate prospects now. So this could be a new tactic, maybe by like the Vegas Golden Knights or something, you know, like send someone there to, it's like in Happy Gilmore with the guy that's chirping Adam Sandler in the one golf. That's what I think, a similar case, maybe, you know?
I mean, as a Blackhawks fan here, I do hope he falls a little bit to us. It would be nice. You can only tank so hard.
Blackhawks might get the first overall pick. I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
maybe Vancouver's putting in a hard bid, but we'll see.
Yeah. But anyways, we're going to move on to the Super Bowl. I love the Super Bowl.
I love the Super Bowl.
I love this year's Super Bowl.
And the Super Bowl was garbage this year. Just going to come out and say that.
Trash.
The result was amazing. That's all that matters.
Yes. So Jackson is the Emerald City Route Artist's biggest fan, and he is here to give us his take on the Super Bowl. He's been a Seattle Seahawks fan since their last Super Bowl.
No connection
to Seattle. Likes their jerseys.
Do like their jerseys. Very nice.
But no, he is a diehard, I will say, because he definitely knows their all-time leading rusher. Okay, all right. So the Seattle Seahawks defeated New England Patriots. New England, the schedule Patriots. Drake, the schedule May.
Drake May.
Yeah, okay. We got to bring this back so the listeners can understand what we're talking about. But Seattle did destroy the Seahawks. And it wasn't really close.
It was a defensive masterclass. The defense actually came out and said that they knew a lot of the tells from the offensive line. They knew sort of what they were going to do. So it was almost over before it started.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest storylines coming out of the Super Bowl, was the offensive line of the Patriots being so awful, and specifically Will Campbell, who refused to talk to the media after the Super Bowl. And I don't know if I agree with that. I think Drake May sat there and talked to the media after the Super Bowl, but Will Campbell says no, doesn't sit right with me. I think Will Campbell has a lot of growing up to do. And I know that he said big time that early when he was drafted, he's like, I'm going to die for these guys. He did not die for these guys in the Super Bowl. Seattle ran over Campbell.
Well, yeah, he didn't die for them in the way that he wanted to, but he did die on that field. I think he broke the record for the all-time allowed pressures or sacks in a Super Bowl, so that's not a good stat to have. But I do agree with you, Adam, that although you had a bad game, every player should stand up and face the music post-game in the interview.
Yeah. Jackson, what did you think of Seattle's defense? Who were the studs on defense for you? Like, who you were most impressed by? They had a great defense all season long, but who really stood out in this game?
I feel like you got to go D-line here. I mean, the secondary is amazing, but DeMarcus Lawrence, what a pickup by Seattle right there. Yeah, the D-line just absolutely destroyed. Nuosu got that touchdown, I think, what, third, fourth quarter, something like that.
Yeah.
That really sealed the game. So, yeah, I would say D-line overall, if they could all get the Super Bowl MVP, mm-hmm. if it were possible,
yeah,
I would give it to them.
But what a performance from Kenneth Walker, too. I mean, boy, did he play out of his mind. And I saw, like, this video about, like, his dad had never gone to an NFL game until this game because he, like, doesn't like crowds. And what a game to go and have in your when your dad's first game watching you. Like, that's pretty cool. Other Seahawks that had great games, Jason Myers and Michael Dixon, okay? I want to say that
MVP
these...
favorite.
These guys are my MVPs, I'm not going to lie. The special teams was amazing in the Super Bowl. If there was a high point in the Super Bowl, like, that was unique from other Super Bowls, I think it was the level of special teams from the Seattle Seahawks. The punts were fantastic.
The punts were amazing.
I think there were, like, two that were down within the five.
Yeah.
And Jason Myers had... two touchdowns worth of points for them. So I think it was a really interesting Super Bowl. I personally think this one was a lot more entertaining than last 2 years ago, like the Patriots, or not Patriots, the Chiefs and the Eagles. I thought that Super Bowl was a blowout, kind of done in the first couple quarters. At least this one was, there was kind of the feeling that New England might be able to string something together. They looked really good on that one drive, like the two passes to Mac Hollins.
Yep.
But
you can't sustain that for a game.
No, and that one interception by May was so questionable. Threw a grilled cheese sandwich to the defense, like
pizza up the middle. It was it was embarrassing to see. No. But he didn't have a lot of time. So what are you gonna do?
Yeah, and you know the listeners will say that I've been saying this for a while that New England is fraudulent and they aren't as good as they're a good team. Don't get me wrong, but they got a lot of growing up to do. They got a lot of places that they can improve on because they're not going to get as easy of a schedule next year. But I think that we were taking a look at the odds actually post Super Bowl, and the Bills have the best odds in the AFC. So that's promising.
Who's we, Adam? That might have just been you.
That might have been me and Antonio Sousa Diaz. We're taking a look at that. But yeah, no, the Patriots don't even have the best odds to come out of the AFC. Seahawks, again, have the best odds to win the Super Bowl, so looking like a potential repeat. What do you think the odds of them repeating are, Jackson? Like, how confident are you in this team? Like, what do you think about the rest of the league? The NFC is clearly much stronger than the AFC, so is it a team in the NFC that you could see maybe posing a threat to the Seahawks? Or do you think it's going to come out of the AFC?
I'm concerned with the NFC West in particular. You never know how it's going to go, except for the Cardinals, obviously. Terrible. They're probably going to lose their quarterback too, which is interesting. But it's those three teams in the NFC West, crazy. Caleb Williams and the Bears, who knows? Mm-hmm. I think I agree. The West is a lot stronger. I'd love to see something out of the AFC. I would love to see a Bills-Seahawks Super Bowl. Should have been this year, unfortunately.
That's what I'm saying. Or a Bengals Seahawks. AP is also a Bengals specialist. In addition to soccer and girlfriend hating. So AP, what do you think of the Cincinnati Bengals? Are they gonna have a stellar offseason and make a comeback?
I appreciate the shout out, Adam. In terms of the Cincinnati Bengals, you never know. You really never know. You have a cheap owner in Mike Brown who's not going to make drastic moves. He's going to go with the safe option. They don't have a scouting team, believe it or not. They have one man named Duke Tobin who makes all the decisions and got lucky on one draft, and that draft was T. Higgins and Joe Burrow, and then took a no-brainer in Ja'Marr Chase in the next year. And then ever since then, every draft pick that we've had so far has either been a bust or at best mid. So I know Mike Brown won't overspend in the offseason, so we won't get any pieces to actually bolster our team, and we can't because both Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are taking up almost 50% of the cap here. So unless the defense can somehow turn it around with the pieces they got, add one or two minor pieces, then I don't see the Bengals getting anywhere near a Super Bowl even the playoffs.
Oh, really?
Well, I think they might be able to kiss the playoffs. I'm not sure about how far we can go in with them.
Because I really don't think the Steelers are going to be as good as they were this year. I think it's going to be Ravens, Bengals. I don't see the Browns doing anything next year.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the Bengals' chances. I feel like they just need one fully healthy year from Joe Burrow to get back to where they were. Because, I mean, they were in the Super Bowl, right? Like, they were close to winning the Super Bowl. That was a good Super Bowl. And I think they've got the pieces. I think that the offensive line, obviously, has been a point of contention for a while now. But this team isn't as far off as people say. I think they're as far off as the Bills are.
I would disagree there, just because I don't watch many Bills games, but I don't hear as many gripes on their offensive line performances as I do on the Bengals, as well as they have a solid defense minus the D-line.
Okay, all right. That's
so fair enough. Think in terms, like, I don't know if you guys watched the Cincinnati-Chicago game last year, but Cincinnati made it back with Joe Flacco at the helm. They scored 2 touchdowns to take the lead, 42-41, 35 seconds left, and they allow a 60-yard bomb from Caleb Williams, 3 missed tackles, and the Bengals lose the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're saying a lot about O-line. Defense, I feel like, isn't Trey Hendrickson coming up on a contract year?
Yeah, I believe he's likely gone before the next season.
Ah. Okay, so maybe the Bills are better off than the Bengals, but, you know, it's a wild league. The Patriots, they went 5-12 last year, and then here they are winning the AFC. Out of all the teams that missed the playoffs, is there a team that you guys think could go crazy style and go back to the Super Bowl, or go to their first Super Bowl? I mean, there's some teams out there that I think a lot of people expected to do well this year, did poorly this year, and might be able to bounce back.
I mean, immediately thinking about the Colts right now.
They
started out really hot with Daniel Jones. So we'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened with the Bucks. I don't know how they could fix that. I'm not really tapped in on the Bucks at all, but I would say Colts. I'm excited to see what they do next year.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good choice. I think a lot of people are thinking Kansas City if Patrick Mahomes can come back for at least half the season. I don't think so, though. I think the Chiefs are going to miss it again next year, get another draft pick. Like, they're going to get two. I think they're going to get a great draft pick this year.
Probably O-line, maybe, or something along
those
lines.
They'll gear up. I think they'll be back after the little two-year hiatus, and then they'll be back. But I don't know. Chiefs, I would say, are my pick. I think that they could turn something around. AP, any team stick out to you?
This is going to be a hot take here, but I'm saying the Washington Commanders. If Jaden Daniels can figure out how to throw the ball again, this team could be dangerous.
Yeah, I feel like he was kind of playing injured all throughout this season. Like, I know he was out a couple of weeks, but then he would come back, and it almost seemed like, why are you bringing him back? Like, the team's not doing that well.
Yeah.
They started out okay, but, I mean,
that injury against the Seahawks just looked absolutely terrible. Like, I don't know why he was in the game at that point, but that should have been career ending. So anything from him next season that's remotely good, I'll be pretty surprised.
Yeah, no, and that's a tough division too, because the Eagles, I think, are going to be good again next year. The Cowboys can always, I think the Cowboys might be a team that turns it around a bit. Maybe they have a good year. I feel like people say that every year, but franchise tag George Pickens, who is my one of my favorite wide receivers. But they're a solid team that could do some damage. The NFL season over. We go into that strange period of waiting, which always seems longer than almost any other sport. Like, the gap between the end of the NFL season and the start of the season, because I don't really count the preseason, because it still feels so far away, even when preseason games are going on. And there's not really any huge name free agents. There's no free agents that I'm really like, oh, I can't. I wonder where they're gonna go. Like, it's gonna be a pretty sad time between now and the start of the NFL season.
Very quiet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is gonna be quiet.
You might have to watch baseball or something like that.
I know. Yeah. Spring training. Teams start spring training Monday. It's already getting back into the swing of things. The Blue Jays made a couple nice offseason additions. Obviously a big loss in Bo Bichette, but they did get a player from the Japanese League, I believe. I don't know his name. And Dylan Cease, who is one of the better pitchers in the NFL. So they've got a nasty rotation going next year. Will they be able to go back to the World Series? You never know. I think as long as you got Vladdy G on that team, you're good for at least a playoff spot. But it'll be definitely a tough hill to climb to get back to where they were last year. Okay, for the last 10 minutes, we're going to talk a little bit about the Winter Olympics because they are in full-on game mode now. Medals have already started to be handed out. Canada not near the top at all at this year's Olympics. Is this a surprise to you guys? Because I feel like Norway was a team that I think they have the most Winter Olympic medals all time. So it's not a surprise that they're up there. But I am surprised with the lack of Canadian medals. AP, do you happen to have the medal count up there?
I do indeed, Adam. Call me Jamie from the Joe Rogan podcast.
Perfect.
I'll give you the top 10.
Okay.
So in first, we have Norway with 12. So 6 gold, 2 silver, 4 bronze. Mm. Then we have Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, United States, Austria, Italy, Japan, France, those are our top 10.
Okay.
And then we are sitting in 14th with 3 medals. One silver, 2 bronze.
What was the silver? I think I missed that today.
Speed skating this morning.
Speed skating. Okay, 2 speed skating medals for Canada. They have 1 bronze and 1 silver, and then the bronze is in snowboarding?
The 2 bronze skiing that we have, one of them is, it's in skiing.
Skiing,
it's in
slopestyle. Slopestyle, yeah, okay. So I did catch those. I watched the slopestyle and I watched first speed skating, but I'll have to check up on that second speed skating. It is early, super early in the Olympics. Like, obviously not all the events are through. I know Canada had some figure skating going on this afternoon.
I think they did pretty well in that.
Okay,
They were leading for a while.
And then hockey really should be something that they do well in, but I mean, we watched a game today, Canada women's against the U.S.
That was
did
not good.
Did not look good at all. The U.S. blanked Canada 5-0. I was watching Canada versus Switzerland a couple days ago, and I was saying this Canada team doesn't look fantastic. They piled the shots on Switzerland's goalie, but only won 5-0 with 55 shots.
Yeah.
And Switzerland had like 6 shots in the game. Like, they compared that game to Canada versus the Swiss at the last Olympics, and Canada won 12-1.
Yep. And what was the shot count?
Very similar. Okay. Almost identical shot count. So that's concerning to me because I know, like, you can say the Swiss goalie stood on her head. She did play well. I watched the whole game. She played well. But also, I just think Canada's not generating high danger chances against these teams that they're significantly better than. 100%. And now they go and play a team like the U.S. that they're kind of on par with. It wasn't really close the whole time, and the U.S. heavily outshot them.
Heavily. Yeah. It almost felt like we were watching a Canada-Italy game, but from Canada being in Italy's place.
Yeah.
And just watching the game, you could see, I think there's a sequence about 5 minutes in the first period where there were 4 or 5 two-on-one chances for Team USA when Canada struggled to get a unblocked shot on net. And I feel like a lot of it comes from, it almost looked like lack of creativity in the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
There was just consistent, like, instead of passing back to find options, it was just drive it into behind the net and then hope someone's there. But due to the U.S.'s speed and positioning, this didn't translate into anything. So no chances at high danger percentages were actually created.
Yeah, no. And I was looking at the PWHL leaders, and the top 4 are Americans. So, like, the States are good. We can't be too surprised that they lost. I think that I'm surprised with how Canada lost. Because, like you said, they did not look organized, honestly. Like, they didn't look like they really knew what was going on. Now, they are without their captain, Marie-Philippe Poulin, who got hurt against Czechia. So that's a big blow. But really, one player should not be meaning that your team cannot score a single goal.
Yeah.
Or get set up in the offensive zone. So
it felt like I was watching peewee hockey again, just dump and chase, but no actual, like, I mean, like, no disrespect to any of the players. Like, they are top level players. It's
Absolutely.
Just the team organization that was really, really lacking in that moment. So I'm wondering if that's a coaching issue or was the moment too big for some players?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure the age distribution of that team. Is this a lot of people's first Olympics?
Yeah, I have no idea off the top of my head, but I do know that this was the one that they could lose.
Yep.
Like, nice that they're playing the States in the group stage, because you get a good look at them. You know what they're going to come out like if you play them again, which I do think Canada will play the U.S. again. It's usually a given that that's the gold medal matchup in women's hockey. Obviously, things can change. Teams can get better. I know Sweden is looking okay this year, too. But Canada's got to figure something out before they go into the knockout stage, because this is not the way you want to play against a great American team.
Yeah, it's quite similar to how Canada's curling went.
Yeah.
Which was also another disappointment.
Yeah, no, the mixed doubles team did not have the best showing at the Winter Olympics this year. They were supposed to be one of the favorites. They were the top three favorite going in. And they started out hot. They won the first four games, I think, but then lost five games in a row. They lost to Estonia, Korea, Great Britain, and then they eventually beat Switzerland in a nothing game. Like, didn't matter. They won the last match, but they were not even competing for a bronze, which was disappointing, especially with curling being like one of Canada's sports that they excel the highest at usually.
Yeah.
So apparently there was like a lot of discrepancies over the ice quality and just getting used to the stones after they resurfaced them. But unfortunate. But the men's and women's curling tournaments are just about to start over the next few days, so Canada could get some redemption there, which I do hope that we can see that. I want to pause just one moment and talk about this Norwegian biathlon athlete that just confessed to cheating like on his girlfriend on live TV. Crazy. Jack, did you see the video?
I did not see the video.
I have not seen the video.
Okay, so essentially this guy's getting interviewed. He just won a bronze medal in the biathlon. And he goes on a little bit of a tangent talking about how he cheated on his girlfriend, who he still loves very much, about 3 months ago. But he told her a week ago. She obviously cut things off.
Makes sense.
But he was saying that, like, this is his last ditch effort to, like, show the whole world that he's a bad guy and he messed up and that he wants her back super bad. So I think this just goes to show that all the lovely ladies in our lives are worth more than Olympic medals and Olympic fame. I think Jack and I can agree that we really love our girlfriends a lot. No, as well as AP.
I do.
Yeah. But it was just a funny moment. Like, you never know what you're going to get with the Olympics. like this is just outrageous
and
stuff
happening. You got to love that. Like, Norwegian, not humor, but they're very upfront with things. So
I mean, to all the ladies listening, would you take him back if he did that?
That's a great question.
That is a good question. Would you, if you get cheated on? They were only dating for 6 months too, and this happened halfway through, 3 months in.
Okay,
so
that's still fresh.
He took a pretty. You know what? I think this is a major red flag. Honestly, I don't like this guy. He was like, this seems like manipulative. You know,
I feel like 4 years. You know, back at the Olympics might do the same thing. Who knows? Yeah,
you never know. That's a good point. The last thing we're going to talk about before we wrap up for today are just the lines that the men's team have been running in practice. Celebrini, McDavid, and Wilson is the first line. A lot of people were kind of stunned with Tom Wilson being up there, but you want to have a little bit of size. You want to have a little bit of ferocity.
Well, to add to that, like, I lived with a perennial Caps fan for 3 years of my university degree, and I began to see the upside of Wilson outside of his ferocity and size. He's actually a skillful player who can set things up. He has a lot of assists.
Yeah. No, it would be an asset to that line. Yeah. And just to conclude, the other lines are Marchand, MacKinnon, Suzuki, Stone, Crosby, Marner, Hagel, Horvat, and Reinhardt. And the defense was, as expected, Toews and Makar, Morrissey, Parayko, Harley, Doughty, Theodore, and Sanheim, with Binnington getting all of the first-team reps at goalie. So, it'll be an interesting start. Canada plays Czechia in their first game. That is coming up in a few days. But it will be, hopefully, better luck than the women's tournament is going so far. But I do think that we'll see a turnaround from that team. I think we're getting double gold. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's going to be great.
I'm going to go one gold, one silver.
One gold, one silver.
Whether that's women's or men's, who knows?
Okay, keep that up. Man of mystery. All right, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.